This episode of the Children's Literature Podcast is brought to you by Summer Break. Summer Break. When does school start again? Welcome to the Children's Literature Podcast. I'm your host, TQ Townsend. This episode is an interview with Ben Dixon. Each month this year, I've been featuring a children's writer from Leicestershire, the astonishingly beautiful county of England where I'm lucky enough to live. Today, you'll hear my conversation with Ben Dixon, the author of the Neil Peel series. These books tell the adventures of a young teen whose greatest flaw is that he always tells the truth. I know I'm repeating myself at this point, but in my conversation with Ben, as with other local writers, I was so impressed by his thoughtfulness and how clearly he understood the children he was writing for. I hope you pick up a copy of the Neil Peel series for yourself and any tween or teen writers around you, because you won't regret the very real, funny way that Ben engages with adolescent school life. I've left links to Ben's website, as well as places where you can buy his books on the show notes for this episode at childrensliteraturepodcast.com. And now, please enjoy my conversation with Ben Dixon. I know I did. Today I'm joined by Ben Dixon, who's the author of The Heroic Truths of Neil Peel. Thanks for coming on the show, Ben.
A pleasure to be here, Tiffany.
Tell me about your connection to Leicestershire.
I was born and raised in Yorkshire initially, but then my parents moved down in 1981 to Culloughton in Leicestershire when I was about 8 years old. And then a couple of years later, we moved over to Ashby de la Zouche, which is where Adrian Mole, the fictional Adrian Mole, lived in Sue Townsend's stories. So, part of my primary school years and then all of my senior school years were at schools in Leicestershire. I was at Loughborough Grammar School from age 11 to 18. My parents have never moved away from the Midlands, from Ashby, and I've still got a brother who lives in Leicestershire as well. So I was back up this weekend for the coronation to spend time with them, and I visit quite frequently still.
Well, I have to say, it's a pretty special place to live. I started visiting here a long time ago when I first started dating my husband. So many things to do outdoors, and the people are just so relaxed and kind, and an amazingly wide variety of food here too. You wouldn't think in some of these little villages there'd be these amazing restaurants with cuisine from all over the world. And in Loughborough, especially because of the university, you get everything. So it really is a fun place to live.
Yes, I used to work in a takeaway pizzeria in Ashby as well when I from ages 15 to 19. So I was helping with cuisine thing.
Well, thank you very much on behalf of Leicestershire residents everywhere. Like many authors of books for teens, you're a teacher. How have your experiences in the classroom helped you as a writer?
I think I know the life of a teen pretty well, really, as it is. As you say, it's my day job. I see day in, day out what worries them, what makes them laugh, which is more important for someone who's trying to write funny books, and what makes them tick, what they find boring. So, yes, I am surrounded by the teens, and therefore I know what is going on in their lives. And I actually use quite a lot of classroom experience from my own childhood as well, because, well, I think things in those days, there was not so much pastoral care going on. So there were incidents from my own life as a Leicestershire teen where I was able to draw on experiences and use those for my books.
I can imagine sometimes you probably feel like you're doing field research.
Well, sometimes. I think I just try to take all of the little experiences a little further to the extreme. Obviously, in a book, it has to be exciting and interesting and funny. So I look at what these children are going through and think, oh, what would it be like in my story? For instance, my main character, Neil Peel, is a boy who always tells the truth. And it's always interesting to look at what would a boy who always tells the truth do in this situation, and put that into where all these children don't quite want to tell the truth because it's not the right thing to do, but it'd be more entertaining if they actually did.
That's a very interesting character quirk. How did you arrive at that, to have him always tell the truth?
That started really a long time ago with two of my children. my daughter Isabel was playing a computer game and she wasn't doing very well. She kept crashing or whatever it was. And my son, Max, who was only little at the time, I think he was probably about 5 or 6, he said, "You're not very good at this, are you?" And she was already frustrated because she got even more frustrated when she'd had the hard truth smacked in her face that she wasn't doing very well. And although I had to tell Max, perhaps you shouldn't say that, it did make me laugh internally. And I thought, well, yeah, somebody who always tells the truth can upset people, but it can be quite funny. That gave me the idea for a character who does that. There's an incident in the first chapter which explains why. It's not magical, for instance. There's no fantasy in the story. There is a reason why he chooses to tell the truth and has found that that always seems to work for him. In the end, not always right at the beginning, but in the end it always works out. And yeah, there are comedy films like Liar Liar, where they're taken to even further extremes and just played for visual gags as well. But I thought all the real experiences that you see and how they could be made amusing with this quirk. So, for instance, going on holiday, having a bad haircut, playing a football match when you hate sport, dealing with bullies, school disco, a sex education lesson, first love, friendship, school play. All of these things come into my story, but with Neil's viewpoint, because it's written in the first person. So he sometimes is just telling the reader what he thinks about this, but he's more often than not putting his foot in it by saying things out loud that perhaps one would usually keep inside.
Well, and that's going to run up against some norms in British culture, because just, again, being an American living in Britain, I often feel that I'm about as subtle as a sledgehammer. And I can see where that would create a lot of humor in the books to have this kid who just says things and everyone in the room just turning to glare at him like, how could you say that out loud? And I do get the chance to observe kind of the quirks of British education and the differences it has from what I grew up with in America. And is there anything in your writing that has specific praise or criticism to offer about how children are educated here?
Yes, I suppose so. Perhaps as a criticism, the first book really is about how Neil and his friends deal with bullies. And some of that bullying takes place in school and some of it takes place beyond school or on the way in, on the school bus, for instance. But yes, I suppose in my story, the bullies thrive a little bit and are allowed to get away with things. And perhaps that might be a little bit antiquated, because I think we do have better pastoral care now. And certainly I see that within the school, I hope that certainly in my school, I don't notice bullying being allowed to thrive. But in Neil's school, it certainly is. And it's really up to the children to come up with ideas of how to thwart this. And sometimes perhaps Neil's personality invites the bullying. But the whole story of the first book comes to a head when the bullies try to get one of Neil's friends involved with a crime, and it's up to them to try and stop it. And I think I managed to explain away how not involving teachers and parents was a good idea. But readers will have to take that and see if they agree. Sometimes perhaps I'm criticising the teachers' personalities. For instance, the PE teacher is a very lazy man who sits in a deck chair and directs his sports practices with a loud hailer and a can of energy drink, while Neil respects several other teachers that he has. So I think I've got a variety of teachers. There are things which are given to children which are very good, like prefect roles, although unfortunately in the second book, Neil gets given the role of a sports prefect, and he is certainly somebody who hates sport, so the honour is turned on its head, really, with him getting the wrong role.
I do agree with you that there's a lot less bullying these days, and it's interesting to compare in British children's literature, where when there's bullies, the protagonists usually have to deal with that by kind of coming up with a plan and doing something a little bit sneaky and definitely not involving the adults. When I was a kid and a young teen, when there were fights, it would just be an outright fight. If someone bullied, it would just be like, you and me in the parking lot after school. And then, you know, the two boys would go at each other for 30 seconds, however much energy they had. And then two teachers would pull them apart and tell them off. So it's funny comparing the bullying I witnessed as a kid in America seemed to be more direct and in your face. And then when you see examples of bullying in British schools, whether in your book or also in, say, the Harry Potter books, you get a lot of bullying in those books. There tends to be less direct face-to-face fighting.
I can't say which one is better bullying, but I am glad to say I also see a lot less of that today. So I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think in my first book, there is a direct fist fight where it starts from an event that happened in real life, actually, at my school, where a boy was eating his lunch and he went up to get something, a spoon, I think, and a bully sitting near him filled both of his jacket pockets with custard because he's left his jacket over the back of his chair.
Oh.
And the victim didn't realise until he finished his lunch, then got up and plunged his hands into his pockets and realised they were full of custard.
Oh.
So he challenged the bully to a fist fight down in the spinny. And they both went down there, and the victim type got into a pugilist stance with raising his jukes ready for a boxing match, and the bully just stood there and smacked him on the nose, and that was the end of the fight. But you're right, there were lots of people standing around shouting, fight, fight, as they do. there's a lot more subtle bullying in the book as well, because Neil's older sister, who's called Lemony Peel, is a kind of evil genius older sister, and she is always antagonizing him. She's always horrible to him, yet at their heart there seems to be occasionally a little bit of love in the relationship as well. And those are the most tender moments of the stories, is when actually she puts her bullying aside for a while and is nice to him. They're very rare, but they happen every now and then. In the third book, you mentioned the first one is called The Heroic Truths of Neil Peel. In the second one, Neil Peel's Holiday, they go on holiday together, and she has a holiday romance where Neil is very... He doesn't trust her partner, and he has to work to uncover this guy's misdoings and earn Lemony's trust there. And in the final book, Lemony goes out to her first concert because she's 16 and comes back very drunk, and Neil has to deal with that again and clean up after her and make sure that she's okay, which he shouldn't really do given all the hatred she gives him, but he's a nice guy really, and so that is a kind of bullying which he does the right thing and overcomes it to be the nice guy.
Well, and I can say this as an oldest child myself, I'm allowed to pick on my younger siblings all I want, but don't you dare do it or I'll come after you, right? And then there's always that thing that binds you together, is that no matter how much you've been at each other's throats that day, you have to protect each other from getting in trouble with mom and dad, right?
Yes, absolutely. And in fact, that's it's almost as if you've shared one part of the third story, Neil Peel's Rival, where this rival guy is trying to do everything he can to make Neil look silly, and Lemony steps in to help, saying, I'm the only one who's allowed to push him around. So it's just what, as you said, with your younger siblings.
I think that's a very common feeling. And then, you know, as you grow up, as you become more adult, you can establish more of a civil relationship. But yeah, I don't know. I guess my childhood was pretty rough and tumble, but it seems fairly similar to other people's too.
Yes, I think so. And I have tried to make these books as realistic as possible. All these situations I mentioned, like a school disco, we've all been there and all had to get ready for it, having a crush on someone in school and having to deal with that. And I've tried to think of as many of the different parts of school life and family life that you have in real life. And the people who have read the books have all said, oh, these things all resonated so much with me, which is what I aimed for. And it seems to have worked.
Well, those early teen years are so messy, and they're such a jumble of different types of experiences and activities, and not all of them wrap up neatly with this nice little denouement, or, you know, sometimes things just happen and they weren't pleasant, and then you just move on to the next thing. So I think maybe having so many different threads of young teen experience, that's what people are responding to. It also makes the books fun. And you've previously expressed concern that many books for teens these days seem to have lost their sense of fun. So for older children, reading goes from really being something they enjoy when they're younger to kind of a chore. It's just something you do to get ready for a school assignment or to prepare for that standardized test. What do you think parents, teachers, and writers can do to fight this?
This is one of the reasons I wrote the book in the first place, because when I'd read books with my children or seen what they were reading, they would read amusing books when they were middle grade readers, so up to about the age of 11, and there was plenty of material around there for them to read. But then as soon as they got beyond that, the funny stuff seemed to dry up, and I just didn't understand that, because if I wanted them to choose a film, they would sometimes choose an adventure film or a teen horror film, but they would more often than not choose a comedy film. And I thought, well, why is that not the case for books? It's all very well having adventure books and vampire books and everything, but there should be a full variety and full range with, like there is with films. And so that's partly why I got into it, because I thought, well, there is no one else writing in this genre. The only other previous one I could remember was Adrian Mole. And when I'd asked in Waterstones and other bookshops, what have you got that's funny for the teen bracket? Well, the only thing they could really show me was Adrian Mole. And that's 35, 40 years old now. So, yes, that's why I wrote them, so that there could be something fun. And you're right that once they move to senior schools, often the children are reading the books they've got to read for their English assignments, but they don't have as much time for reading for pleasure. I think especially with the social media around at the moment, and that's not going away anywhere. So in terms of what the parents, teachers and writers can do about it, well, as writers, I think you should keep the variety as great as possible, because there will be those children who don't like to read a funny book. They would rather read something serious or heart-wrenching. But I think we need the variety. So I would like to see more writers writing funny books. Parents, I think, can set a good example. If the parents are always glued to their phone or PC, then why would the children do any different? But if they see their parents reading, then children might think it's a good idea. Families can talk about books. They can buddy read things together, perhaps. And teachers, I think, well, at my school, I'm very pleased that we have a thriving library, and there are reading sessions built into the day, usually in the mornings. So all of the children are encouraged to, well, and they have to be reading a book on certain mornings of the week. So as long as that doesn't disappear from schools, then I think that their schools can do their bit. And having visiting authors in is always a good idea, just to bring it to life for children as well. I think there's something we can all do to keep the reading alive, and just make sure that when they have got downtime at the weekend and in the evening, that it doesn't have to be leaping for your phone or the television remote control.
You've mentioned the Adrian Mole books several times and how you grew up in the town where the books are set. Can you talk a little bit about the influence of Sue Townsend on you when you were a kid? Did she kind of loom large in the neighborhood? Were people generally aware of her? When did you start reading her books, and how did they impact you?
Actually, I think my older brother had the first one. It was the era when they were all coming out and everybody was reading them. So everybody was talking about them at school. And if you weren't reading them, then you were definitely left out. So I decided that when my brother had finished with it and I was allowed to read it, then I would certainly sink my teeth in there. And at the time, I was a little younger than 13 and three quarters. So some of the things Adrian was talking about were excitingly going to be happening in my future, I suppose. And I loved reading the stuff you're not quite allowed to read yet. And then as soon as I'd finished the first one, I was desperate to read the Growing Pains one afterwards as well. I don't think beforehand I was aware that it was that I would be reading them, because they were set in Ashby. And then actually realizing they were the same, it was supposed to be the same town where I lived, was just a bonus, really. And I don't think he dwells on any actual real parts of the town. But it was always nice to think, yes, this book is set in my town, and Adrian's an Ashby boy, so he's probably going through the same things I am in the same place. But yes, to know that it was set in Ashby in Leicestershire was fantastic. And yeah, they were, as I said, they were a mega hit, and everybody read them. So I was pleased to be one of the crowd.
It's nice to know that there's a book that all the teenagers thought was taboo and they wanted to read it and hid it from their parents. You know, it's just, it's nice that that's what they were doing, because, you know, you think there's other things teenagers get into that maybe their parents wouldn't be so happy to find out they were secretly doing. But I wonder how many parents discovered that their kid was reading an Adrian Mole book, but then let the kid think they were doing something more edgy than they actually were, just to keep them reading.
Yes, absolutely. And I think because my books are quite cheeky, that sometimes the front covers lull people into a perception that they're probably for younger readers, but they aren't. They're too cheeky for anyone really under 11, I would say. But I do also try to put in a layer of humour for the adults. I was wanting to entertain myself as I was writing them. And I'd used my adult children, who are in their early 20s now as a sounding board there to see if it was going to keep them interested as well as anyone younger. And they all said there was plenty for them as well. But yes, some of it is quite rude humour, which does appeal to the teens. But yes, that was something I enjoyed doing, is putting the cheeky things in there for younger ones. And a lot of the younger readers at my school don't actually get it. But if they reread it in a couple of years' time, they might appreciate some of the jokes a bit more.
So what are you currently working on? Is Neil Peel going to have more adventures, or have you moved on to another character?
That was one of the things I struggled with as I finished the third book, because he's 13, or he's about to be 13 when I finished the third one. And I wondered how long I could continue this always telling the truth and get away with it perhaps in the first 2 years of your senior school, which he does. But then I thought, taking it beyond that, I'm going to have to give away more than I was planning to and take the book in a different direction, really. I don't want him to have to talk about his bodily changes too much. That wasn't the plan. I wanted to keep it in a different direction. So I've finished the third book, and I don't plan to write any more on Neil Peel, but I'm currently trying to turn the first book into screenplay format, because it is very visual, I think. People can picture it happening in their lives, they've said. After that, I've got a couple of ideas which are really quite different, and I'll decide which of those is more likely to get the green light, unless somebody comes calling and says they really need me to write more Neil Peel books.
That sounds very interesting. I hope you keep me posted. Where can listeners find you online?
The best place probably is the neilpeel.com website, which has information about all of the stories and reviews and something about the art, quizzes, little video clip. I was on television a couple of months ago on a Sky channel for a half-hour interview, so there's a link to that. So there's plenty of information on there. The books themselves are all three of them on Amazon. Just searching under Neil Peel should bring them up, or my name, Ben Dixon. The first book is available more widely as well, Barnes & Noble in America and lots of different shops across the world. And my Instagram, Ben Dixon Author, which is how you and I met, is also a good place to find out about what other people have thought about the book, or the hashtag Neil Peel. We'll get to a few other people's reviews where you'll get a more independent viewpoint than mine. I think they're fantastic, but it's if other people say that, then you should pay more heed to them.
Thanks so much for joining me today, Ben. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Me too. What a pleasure. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to the Children's Literature Podcast. Please subscribe and give the show a rating. Send comments to letters@childrensliteraturepodcast.com. I'm your host, TQ Townsend. Thanks for listening.